We know that Jesus is going to Jerusalem, and the journey is a journey that we call of discipleship. When he's teaching those following him, you know, what it means, how to be a disciple, what it means to be a disciple. And today we hear that a great crowd was following him. And yet his words, well, are always words of encouragement, but at the same time are very, very hard words, very harsh, the way we can hear today, talking who cannot be his disciples. And he was words that we would today consider maybe too strong. He says, you know, you're following me here, you know, on his way to Jerusalem. But if you do not hate, you know, your family, mother, father, children, brothers, sisters, and even your own life. I mean, if you love those more than you love me, you cannot be my disciple. Then he talks about two parables, you know, building a tower, which probably, you know, by this tower you could understand, you know, in a vineyard, a tower that would be tall enough to watch, you know, to keep guard, to go up and keep guard of the vineyard, you know, for thieves or animals that could come into the vineyard. So that, you know, if you can do that, or a king with 10,000 troops, you know, get into battle. So if you don't calculate beforehand, you know, you might be the laughing stock of your neighbors, or it would be, your kingdom will be crushed by the upcoming, you know, troops that will battle you. The same way, he says, you cannot be my disciples if you do not leave all your possessions. Who can be Jesus' disciples then? How can we understand his words? Jesus is, you know, he had a crowd following him. And we, time and again, we hear, not only in Luke's gospel, but all the four gospels, we hear that people would come to him, and he would easily, whenever he got into a town, gather a people around him. People would bring the sick, all the infirm, all those needing healing, would bring to him. Great crowds would gather to listen to him. So he had no problem in gathering those people. Yet Jesus was not trying to be popular. Oh, popular, so people are coming after me. No. Jesus wanted people to understand his message and to know that his message, the first moment will be a message that people would listen to, or they would witness, in the sense if they saw a miracle or if they saw Jesus forgiven someone's sins, so they would witness that. So, but then that was not enough. There would be, or it is necessary, a response from those who are listening, from those who are witnessing, you know, Jesus' mighty works. It was necessary a response. And it is that he's telling us. It's, you know, that people, and for us today to understand that he says, you know, love your God above all things. God is first. We have a commandment. What is the fourth commandment? Oh boy, I think we need to go back to class. Honor thy father. I know you knew. You just were afraid to say this might be the third or the fifth. So I don't know if this is the fourth, but I know you knew that. You know, it is honor. You know, you should honor, you know, your mother and the father in the sense of family and respect. So Jesus is not against the commandment when he says, hate your mother and your father. You know, understanding the idea of hate here is sometimes it's difficult because it's like we have to say, oh, Jesus did not say that. It's like we are doing damage control. Jesus said that, so we have to go behind and say, no, but he didn't mean that, you know. But that's not the point. The question is, hate in the context is not something that say that perhaps how we would use the word today, you know. It's a question of saying that cannot be first, or it cannot depend on the occasion. What do I mean by that? You know, sometimes, you know, in our lives, we can make many options. And day by day, we are faced with situations that we have to decide which way to go. And that could give us an understanding that say, well, life is a sum of things that we add up of temporary things. You know, today I decided this, tomorrow I can decide that. Yet the Lord is asking us to look way beyond that, to look ahead, and to make one choice in life. One choice that will guide and direct all the other daily or whatever choices will come our ways. And he say, the first choice is this, we'll follow him. Then the way we're going to love our mother and father, the way the parents will love their children, you know, brothers will love each other, is a love that is directed and guided by our love of God, our love of Jesus. That's what he's asking from his disciples. That's what he's asking, telling, you know, it's perhaps easier to understand possessions, you know, material things. We know they are material things, you know, we might need them, we use them, we can have them, you know, work, we can have them, there's no problem with that. It's the moment that those things, they take priority, they take the first importance, you know, they become essential in our lives. And that's what the Lord is reminding those following him. So I believe today the question for us is, what is the greatest choice in our lives? What is the fundamental choice in our lives that will guide all the others, that will not impoverish our love, you know, of family, our love of neighbor? It will not impoverish that, because Jesus, of course, we find that in the scriptures, in the gospels all the time. He's saying for us to love one another. That's the greatest commandment. But we cannot just jump from, you know, from one place to another without knowing that all this love will come out of love and the following and discipleship of Jesus the Lord. So we ask that the Lord will give us, will grant us. And one example that we find that, you know, that Jesus will grant that discipleship in us is Mother Teresa of Calcutta, whom tomorrow will be declared a saint. It's interesting, you know, when we say, what is a saint? You know, saints are our heroes in faith. And it's becoming interesting because maybe years back, way back, perhaps even before Pope Saint John Paul II, I was still a child when he became Pope, but it was not so common to hear and see the big celebrations when the Pope declares someone blessed or declares someone a saint. You know, so then you would talk about St. Thomas Aquinas of the 12th century. You talk, you know, St. Francis of Assisi. You would talk about St. Augustine, St. Teresa. You know, 2 centuries ago, 5 centuries ago, someone who was so far away, so far back in history, that you could say, wow, you know, they are living another time. That time was easier because we have no clue how they lived at that time. But now, you know, since Pope John Paul II, Saint John Paul II now, and continue with Pope Benedict and now Pope Francis, we can hear that more often. And not only you can hear, we are seeing people who many hear. You know, I met people say, oh, I met Mother Teresa. You know, oh, Mother Teresa greeted me. Oh, I met Pope John Paul II. I had a chance, you know, to get his blessing. And the idea said, and they are declared saints. And then you say, oh, they are not that far away. They are not that so distant from our reality. So what is it to be a saint? You know, they are not out of this world. They are men and women who lived their faith, who understood what Jesus was telling, even today in the gospel, what is supposed to be first, what is the fundamental choice that you have to make in your lives. They understood that. And everything else in their lives, their daily choices, was guided by that. Now, Mother Teresa, she was born in was it Albania, you know, in Europe. Yeah, and that time was Yugoslavia. Albania was, I think, all that area. But she was sent, you know, to India to work as a teacher. And then she said, that was not fulfilling, you know, her answer to God's call. And she began and started the Congregation of the Sisters of Charity, working with the less privileged or the forgotten ones, you know, that would find on the streets. And even today, the Congregation of Charity is so many places and close to those forgotten by the world, by society, that sometimes don't even have a human face anymore. And they are there, because she said, there I can see the face of Christ. There I can see that Jesus is suffering again. So such an example that they become heroes for us. And because that, we believe they are in heaven. When the church asks for miracles, that they have to prove that miracles happen with intercessions of those, like Mother Teresa or those, is because we believe they are in heaven. If they are in heaven, miracles can happen because they are closer to God, you know. And closer to God, their intercession can be so much, you know, powerful and effective. That's why we believe in miracles, and they do happen. So let us pray that the Lord will continue to inspire the church at large, all the church, but especially each one of us. Sometimes we are not called to be like Mother Teresa, or will never become as famous as she did. I don't think she ever asked to be famous. She never asked to be any of those things. She just wanted to fulfill her mission of putting Jesus first. And may we learn from that and serve those who are near to us. And that might become or might be a reality in our own family first, in our own neighborhood, friends, all of that, that's what will inspire us. So let us ask that the Lord will grant that and will make this fundamental choice in everything we think, we do, we plan, and who we are. And we'll be following Him as He has demanded from us.